Fast Money starts right now, live from the Nasdaq market site overlooking New York City's Times Square. I'm Melissa Lee. Your traders on the desk are Tim Seymour, Steve Grasso, Dan Nathan, and Guy Adami. Chewy goes dog wild. It's just the latest IPO to go parabolic on its first day of trading. But is it actually a bad sign for the stock? We will explain. Plus, Facebook going full crypto, set to unveil its cryptocurrency called Libra next week with a number of big backers. We've got all the details. We start off with what could be a make or break moment for the rally. There are just two and a half trading days. We only do this because you guys hate the song.
Name the band.
I don't know.
Europe.
Okay. 4 days until the Fed decision. Markets are pricing a 20% chance of a rate cut in June, a nearly 90% chance in July. This is President Trump doubles down on his criticism of Fed Chair Jerome Powell and pushes for him to cut rates. And today, we saw semis get crushed on trade, disappointing data from China, the 10-year yield near lows. Is this the perfect recipe for a rate cut? What does that mean for the market? Guy, welcome back.
Thanks, Mel. It's great to be back. I missed
We're
all you guys.
We're glad you survived the Dominican Republic.
I was in the Dominican
Republic. That's why you missed everyone.
You were in the Dominican Republic. All the crazy places to go. With that said, I mean, scarier than the Dominican Republic, in my opinion, is the fact that the Fed would even consider cutting rates. And the fact that President Trump is saying they should cut rates is, to me, it's madness at the highest level. I still think the market is pricing in way too dovish a Fed. I think the Fed can only disappoint next week. And I'll say it again. I think the market's toppy here. The VIX at 15 in this environment makes zero sense to me.
Yeah. Dan?
Yeah. Listen, I think that we can look beyond June. We're not going to get a cut next week. So it really comes down to July. And at that point, we're going to know what the outcome of if there is a meeting between President Xi and President Trump at the G20 at the end of the month. And then we're going to start to get more earnings. And that really could dictate whether or not we have that hike at the towards the end of July. So to me, we're going to talk about semis a little bit. I expect some other pre-announcements before Q2 ends. And if there is only a kick the can sort of announcement on trade, I think that's a sort of thing that investors will start to price a higher likelihood of a cut. But if we don't get it, that's where it's lights out again to the downside.
I think no matter what happens next week, the market moves higher. First of all, it's only 20% chance that we do get a cut. So
the Fed sounds hawkish in the.
Well, I don't think he's going to sound hawkish. They're actually going to tiptoe their way into a cut.
OK, let me
that
clarify.
Patience
this.
Word is going to be removed. That's the chatter.
As dovish as the market wants it to sound, which equals hawkish.
Yes.
Then that would be.
I think they're supposed to. The consensus is they're going to remove the word patience out of the language. If they don't remove that, that would be the equivalent of being hawkish. But I think no matter what, market moves higher from here. This is Goldilocks.
The last two Fed meetings have been disappointments from a market perception, again, relative to what expectations were. So I think the bond market at 208, look, the 10-year to me screams no growth. And a growth scare is much worse than an inflation scare, even though the long end of the curve supposedly is supposed to reflect inflation expectations. What's going on here right now is I think people are probably pricing in a hefty part of global central bank easing. And the reality is what the final easing is going to be is not going to give you anything back. The dollar was 55 basis points in the dollar index higher today, bounced off that 50-day, looks like it's reasserting itself. That's not good for risk assets. Dollar yen is also actually moving at the same time in that direction. Look at commodity prices. Look at anything that's reflation-oriented, and it's telling you it's not a great time to be in anything cyclical.
I mean, look at gold.
Well, gold is the opposite side of that coin. Yeah. And gold has had this stealth rally. We've been talking about it for a while. The gold miners have done well, and the gold commodity is a level now we haven't seen in quite some time. In my world, it's about to break out to the upside, and it's done that under the auspices of a dollar that's actually been pretty strong until recently. So if this dollar does weaken in a meaningful way, which it probably should, I think gold takes off the upside. Gold is telling you, in my opinion, that the equity market is way ahead of itself.
The equity market is above all its moving averages, though. So
yeah.
I look at it, and I agree. There's a lot of things that are negative, a lot of things that are headwinds for the overall market. But the market is telling us something. It wants to move higher. It's shaking a lot of this stuff off.
How is that telling us that it wants
2%
to move
off all-time
highs? Just because
above
it's 2%
all
off
moving
all-time
averages,
highs?
It shook off all of trade concerns. It's shaken off all of growth concerns. We've had global growth concerns for quite some time. All it cares about is the Fed and whether the Fed is hawkish or dovish.
But, Steve, just, the last two times the S&P has been approaching 2,900, it was January of 2018, and it was then fall of last year. And what happened? You could have made the same argument. I'm not telling you you're wrong. I'm just saying that those narratives were, that was the more constructive narrative about the S&P making higher highs. So if we're right back at that same spot, the risks are increasing for that growth scare that Tim's talking about.
I don't disagree with you. I think we've shaken off a lot of those concerns from the last time this happened
really?
To now.
But
if the market does make new highs, I think the bear story has to sort of go on the side and say, okay, we're all missing something. If the market makes new highs coming out of this meeting and the market starts to slow grind in the summer environment, higher makes new highs, I think we're missing something.
So, by the way, when someone says, I don't not agree with you, so when someone it basically means they're not agreeing with you. I don't disagree with you means basically I don't agree with you at all. If we think about the Fed, and Steve's actually right, fighting the Fed has Steve's once again correct here.
Better.
Fighting the Fed has been a losing proposition for 10 years. Okay, so to the extent that we've seen this before, where people have questioned earnings capacity of companies, people have questioned the global economy, we've seen the stock market to continue to chug along. So to the extent that I don't believe you can see the S&P go careening down, certainly to 2650 is probably the one level everybody's targeting if we actually have a real, you know, that's a 5% correction. My point is simply, I think positioning, expectations, and sentiment right now are the biggest issue. The economy is not the issue. It's all about where positioning is, and people are positioned on the bull side.
So we have a treacherous calendar in the next few weeks. Mm-hmm. How do you position yourself?
I think you want to be defensive. I mean, I do disagree with Steve about being constructive on equity theory. I get it. There is no alternative. We have rates where they are, and we know that we have a dovish Fed. They are not going to turn back to being hawkish, which was where they were in December of 2018. So that's not happening. But I think the interest rate market has already moved ahead of that a little bit, okay? And I think that there's a potential. You use the term Goldilocks. I'm not so sure that makes a whole heck of a lot of sense. My biggest risk is if we look back to 2015, when we had the 10-year yield below 2%, we had equities were much, much lower. We had a dollar that was strengthening. We had commodities going lower. And a lot of the same things were in place. I just think it's not a Fed policy mistake right now is going to happen. It is a protracted trade war that could just deflate the global economy, which is very fragile right now.
So when I say Goldilocks, I mean if we have a weaker economy, then the Fed is more likely to cut rates. Uh-huh. If trade talks go south, the Fed is more likely to cut rates. If we have a stronger economy,
the
market moves higher.
Can the Fed save everything?
The market told us last week that the only thing that they care about, or 2 weeks ago, the only thing they care about is where the Fed is positioned. They don't care about trade. The market rallied in positioning, got so short off that recent low that I think the market was caught offsides to the bear side.
Look, we've created another asset bubble, whatever you want to say, and the Fed has targeted asset prices. So it's not going to happen tomorrow. And if you think about what happens when growth, we talk about this triple B threat of where the biggest tranche of debt exists. It's one notch above junk. And for a lot of companies, if we go into a protracted growth dynamic headwind, I do think you're going to start to see credit issues that become not just significant, but very significant. We've seen moments where the credit markets in the last 6 months, especially during periods of liquidity drying up, have been devastating, frankly, to the downside. But in the short run, look, the reason why the Fed's not going to cut is because the economy is not cratering right now. The leading indicators are not your friend. But the overall dynamic in terms of consumption trends, and even if you looked at the ISM services, it wasn't that bad. Manufacturing's not so great. But if you look at the Fed surveys on a regional level, they've been telling you that CEOs and companies and hiring is cautious based upon trade dynamics. It's not telling you that their businesses are falling apart. And there's no place for the Fed to cut. It gets back to positioning.
If the Fed doesn't cut, the markets will probably sell off. Right? Okay. And if there is a trade war, then the markets will sell off. So where's the risk to the downside?
Didn't the market sell off already on the
Look
trade?
Look where Mel put you, Steve.
I know.
Well,
she gave you no right room.
I
agree with her, I lose. But the markets,
are,
we already played that act before.
Have we really played?
Well, we've had a trade war.
Round of tariffs on $300 billion worth
We've already
of
had
goods?
A ratchet up. If you think that the market hasn't.
We haven't had that, though.
Do you think that the market hasn't? The market is a forward pricing mechanism.
Judging from Broadcom's full year sales forecast, the market has not incorporated that into their thinking.
In the semis, everyone was thinking about a back half of the year that was going to be better than the first half. Mm-hmm. So what happened is they supplied up a lot, and then the back half, if that doesn't come through, they're going to get hit.
I guess
my
argument was that would be the most obvious group to respond in advance to $300 billion.
We're just digesting some of those right now.
And they did. The semi started selling off last June. They led the market pullback. They were the first to sell off.
So let me just tell you a couple things that I see. So you asked, where do you go in this market right here? Look at Microsoft, which is a couple percent from its all-time highs. The thing rallied 10% in a straight line over the last week and a half or whatever. That is a defensive trade in my opinion. That's like going into gold or something right here. Look at the other names that act really well. We talked about them last night on the show. Walmart, Costco, Target. These are all fairly defensive sort of names. Now, ultimately, a trade war will hit them. But this is the most important thing to me about the Broadcom warning last night. We are seeing the disruption. We are seeing the headwinds of the trade war in the supply chain. We're not seeing it at the finished goods level, which is why some of these retailers are trading so well in a defensive manner. And I think that's really what's going to weigh on the stock market as we get downbeat earnings guidance for the back half of the year because of the uncertainty about the supply chains and the disruption from the trade war. And that's what weighs on the stock market.
Yeah, I think with each passing day, we're less close to getting a trade deal. I'll say it again. I mean, we're 16 months into this U.S.-China thing. And I don't think we're any closer now than we were 6 or 7 months ago. And despite what President Trump says, I know he says, you know, when there's a deal to be made, you know, I'm ready to make it. I don't think that's true. I think the Chinese hold all the cards. I'm probably one of the only people that think that. With that said, if you want to be someplace, big cap farmers traded okay. And I'm telling you, gold miners are going higher. They're breaking out to the upside. It's a levered way to play gold. And the fact that Procter & Gamble is trading where it is, to me, that's actually really scary. Procter & Gamble at all-time highs trading 24 times forward earnings makes absolutely no sense to me.
All right. Speaking of semi-stocks, the Chartmaster says there's more pain ahead for the beaten down group. He will explain why he's seeing red. Plus, chew on this. Another day, another hot IPO. Shares of Chewy surging in its debut, and the next hot IPO could be just around the corner. And later, Mark Zuckerberg is about to go full crypto next week when Facebook's expected to unveil its new cryptocurrency platform. We'll bring you the latest details. We're live from Times Square in New York City. Much more Fast Money right after this. Welcome back to Fast Money. Check out the cool crowd that turned up outside the New York Stock Exchange this morning for Chewy's IPO debut. And that's not all that turned up. Shares of the pet food company surging nearly 60% today during a ferocious day of trading. Let's get to Leslie Ficker down at the NYSE with more on this. Hey, Les.
That's right, Melissa. Chewy shares soaring today, up nearly 60% in their debut. It's the largest initial public offering for a U.S. e-commerce company ever. Chewy and parent company PetSmart selling a combined $1 billion to investors. The deal was massively upsized, pricing above a boosted range and selling more shares than expected. PetSmart received the bulk of the proceeds. The retailer acquired Chewy just 2 years ago, and in its debut today, Chewy is worth quadruple the amount. So what brought investors in the door today? Well, Americans are spending more on their pets, and they are spending more money online. Chewy says its customers each spent $334 on average in 2018. Chewy says its sales last year would have grown 20% as a result of increased spending without even adding any new customers. All in, Chewy's top line grew 68%. Consumers are pivoting from buying pet supplies in store to online. E-commerce represented 14% of pet industry sales in 2017, up from 4% in 2015. It was projected to grow 25% in 3 years. But as those trends hold, more and more consumers are noticing. Supermarkets, warehouses, e-commerce companies, including Amazon, have been making a big push into the pet world. Now, if they choose to lower prices, that could put an even further dent into Chewy's already negative margins. Melissa.
All right, Leslie, thank you. Leslie Picker, the New York Stock Exchange. Tim Seymour, do you like Chewy?
I don't like Chewy. I do think people are willing to do almost and pay almost anything for their pets, and good for Fido. But I think at some point, again, it's about where is the moat of the business, and it's exactly that. Big box stores are becoming very competitive. You're actually seeing private label stuff. So, no, I'm not chasing Chewy.
Good for Fido, good for Flip, good for Dodger.
My boy, Dodger. This is an interesting shout out to Dodger. Interesting that we're talking about a non-tech IPO. We spent a lot of time over the last few months talking about some of those smaller float ones that have done really well. Zoom, PagerDuty, Revolve is just ripping right now. So to me, what's really interesting is going to be next week when we get Slack and its direct listing. And, you know, we have one big comp. It was Spotify. It was last year. It's up about 9% from that one. We don't talk about it a whole heck of a lot. There's been a lot of debate about direct listing versus some of these smaller float sort of IPOs. So to me, I think that the Slack thing, you know, up supposedly $17 billion from last year when they last raised it, about $7 or $8 billion. That could be very telling, I think, for broad tech.
Well, what I have a problem is Chewy loses money, right? So we've decided to pick the ones that we want to reward that lose money. It lost $268 million. Why would this stock, at the point of it, at this point at its growth period, why would they lose money still? And to Tim's point, this is an online realtor, retailer.
Yeah. Yeah.
Why I would go into there if it was a standalone brick and mortar.
Really?
Yeah, because at least
there's
some
losing money, but they're brick and mortar.
No, because if there was brick and mortar, at least you could make the case where you don't want to go on Amazon and buy it. You want to go in there and get some sort of an expertise about your pet. But this is online. Why don't I just go to Walmart? Why don't I just go to Amazon?
Apparently, the customer service is amazing. Chewy. They will send you, for instance, a portrait of Flip.
Yeah.
To hang up, or they send condolence letters when they learn that you lost your pet.
I think I'm a pretty
marketing.
Normal, right?
It's really amazing.
Somewhat normal, right? Normal family. I mean, that's what I think.
Family's normal.
We have three dogs. I'm telling you right now, if I say, let's go out and buy me something, the kids will look at me like I got nine heads. You want to go out and buy the dog something? They race to the car. I'm not even kidding around. It's ridiculous. I say you buy this thing. The argument that you made was true 2 years ago when PetSmart bought them for $3.5 billion. Now they have like an eight bag on this thing, and I think the world's actually in a better place for Chewy. So despite everything you
why
said,
why do they lose
money,
though? Why do they lose $268 million? Why do they lose $338 the year before? It just doesn't make sense to me. It almost gets back to the argument that we have on this desk. When they come public, who are they coming public for? Is it for shareholders to benefit
in
profits?
Money on growth.
Amazon could turn it on and off whenever Amazon wants to.
By the way, in cannabis land, the companies that are offering CBD pet food and products, Curaleaf has pet products. I mean, these things are being lifted off the shelves like crazy.
There's a moat around that, though. That's the moat you were talking about.
Yeah, I think so. More there, because there truly is a regulatory dynamic and people that have a first mover.
All right. For more on the Chewy IPO, head on over to CNBC.com. I'm Melissa Lee. You're watching Fast Money on CNBC First and Business Worldwide. Here's what else is coming up on Fast.
Run, Forrest, run!
Nike is running high, but Mike Coe says the stock's about to trip up. He'll tell you how to profit if shares stop short. Plus,
did anyone read that article about Bitcoin I sent you?
Yes, Sheldon. And now Facebook is about to go full crypto, and it has investors diving back into the stock. We've got those details. There's much more Fast Money after this.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Facebook's cryptocurrency plans are getting some support. According to the Wall Street Journal, more than a dozen companies, including Visa, MasterCard, PayPal, and Uber, are backing the tech company's payment system called Libra, which is set to launch next year. The new digital coin will be connected to government-issued currencies to create a more stable system to avoid the big swings which have plagued other cryptocurrencies. So let's get the 2 cents on Facebook getting into yet the blockchain game, Dan.
Two bits. The thing. You know, I read a great note from Mark Mahaney at RBC Capital. He's on the network a lot. And he had a great piece about this. And he's really talking about two reasons why Facebook is going in this direction. It's payments and it's commerce. And those two things, with a stablecoin attached to their user base, and it's also very focused on Asia. They have about 1 billion monthly active users in Asia. That's 4x what they have here in North America. And what works over there, it's not about the actual hardware. It's about the operability of the apps that they have. And they're doing payments in commerce. They're doing it on WeChat. And so this is really a focus, I think, over there. So to me, I think this is a huge, huge potential thing. We know they're not in China, but this creates a scenario where they could be in China in a whole different ways that don't really rely on social networking.
It's amazing all the headwinds that Facebook has had, it's up 38% year to date. And I think this is another testament to maybe people are taking their eye off the ball on the privacy concerns. Now you throw in a little Bitcoin icing on top of this game. It's up 38% already. I think that advertisers are just jumping back into Facebook, and with that stat in Asia, Asia 4-1, I think that's a tremendous tailwind for Facebook. It's almost making people forget about all of the problems that they've recently had.
I think if you're in an environment where regulatory headwinds are on Facebook and other guys in the sector, crypto's not your answer. The irony here is that actually crypto could be a form of security and offering Facebook users something that they might not feel as comfortable on with the rest of the platform. And this is actually anonymity and an ability to actually transact.
And it's a stable coin.
That's what I would say.
This one's a stable coin, too. So that adds a little bit of
security. And it's a centralized coin. Right. It's like the antithesis of what Bitcoin's original white paper is, in a way. But think about it. They have 2.5 billion monthly active users, and they're going to give some fuel to some operations that are going to go on between them. So to me, it's very different than actually Bitcoin and the Bitcoin network.
You know, Mel, despite my age, I have an excellent memory, as you know.
Oh, like an elephant.
Like an elephant. And last week I said, you know, it's funny thing about Facebook, for the first time in a while, it's set up really well on the long side. I said, you know, December 24th low, recent high, the 50% retracement of that move was 160. We traded down to 161. We had a whole conversation. For the first time in a while, it sets up well on the long side. Look at where we are now there, Melms. Pretty good. So at least for the first time in my world for a long time, I think you can trade Facebook with a reasonable stop to the downside, looking to take out the all-time high we made, whenever the hell that was, back in August of last year.
Not bad for an old guy.
Yeah, yeah. Not bad.
Well, but again, why do you think that the dynamics that we've seen with the regulators is something that is going to be supportive to
nothing's
your,
changed.
Your technical
you're,
call?
You're right on that. You're right on that point. Business. Nothing has changed. And it has until recently, it's traded really poorly. But I think that move that day on the volume we saw was enough to get me bullish.
Steve made one point. He said that advertisers are coming back. They actually never left. And if you just look at the revenue growth, it's telling you that the advertisers never left. And so all these concerns about privacy, it doesn't look like usage has been down so much. I know there's been some studies or some data that suggests it's down a little bit, but that's on the core Facebook platform. Instagram doesn't seem to be having the same issues.
All right. It's not, why are you snickering?
No, I'm smiling. I'm having a good time. I miss everybody. I can't be happy. You know, when I'm mad, people say I'm mad all the time. When I'm happy, I'm too happy.
We're glad you're back. Time for the final trade. Tim.
So we talked about that which might be defensive in this environment, whatever you think the environment is. Look, United Healthcare certainly went through a difficult period 6 months ago and has been working its way out of it. Earnings probably 20%+ top line. UNH, to me, is an all-weather stock, especially now.
Steve Grasso.
So GE, I've been long on this for a while. Tusa always comes out, and every time I start to feel optimistic about it, Stephen Tusa puts out a negative call on the stock. I'm starting to feel optimistic about it again. Buy it here.
Dan.
Yeah, so that Broadcom guide down is just the start of something. It's not the end. I think you sell the SMH, the ETF that tracks semiconductors on rallies. I'll show you how to do it on Options Action. Stay tuned.
Nice to you.
You know, Mel, we got the best pages in all of
the
NBC. Best ones.
We always do, but
and we got
sometimes
this great kid. I wish I could remember his name. No, Evan Q. Okay. We call him Eugene. Gino, last day here. He's unbelievable.
Clap him out.
Seventh in the Brooklyn half mile.
Right out.
Good looking
burgers.
Man.
This is the best one we've ever had.
Best one we ever had.
Burgers.
Nubat Mining, Mel, back to you. Have a good OA.
All right. Thanks for everything, Evan. See you back here Monday at 5. Don't go anywhere. Options Action's up next.